Well, The Perfect Storm, a short series on Job. We've come to our sixth message. If you remember, Job has lost everything, even his children. And so there is the inevitable question. Why? Well, Job's three friends, they say, we know. We know why. We can explain. All right, go on then. Well, God is in control and God is just. He therefore punishes the wicked and rewards the righteous. So, Job, if you suffer more than others, it must be because you are a greater sinner than others, because there is no such thing as innocent suffering. But, of course, they're horribly wrong. Job's suffering not because he's guilty. He's suffering because he's innocent. He's suffering to prove that the devil is a liar, that Job serves the Lord not out of self-interest, but because God is worthy, worthy of his soul, his life, his all. So Job resists their false charge. He says, yes, I am a sinner, but not in a way that explains this, not in a way that explains why I've been singled out. But if Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar have come up with the wrong answer, Job is determined to find the right answer. And as we saw last week, he argues with God. Job knows that his hope doesn't lie in persuading his friends that he's innocent. It lies in a real meeting with God. And we felt his frustration, we felt his struggle. Oh, if only I could meet with God. If only God would explain himself. If only he would tell me why he's picked on me. In fact, Job takes it even further, doesn't he? He wants his day in court. So he says, chapter 13 and verse 23... He's prepared his case and he says, how many are my iniquities and sins? Make me know my transgression and my sin. Why do you hide your face and regard me as your enemy? He says to God, what have you got against me? Why are you doing this? I'll see you in court. Explain yourself. Why? And the point is this, unlike his three friends, Job is coming to terms with the fact that God really is God. And that God can do whatever he likes. And there's nothing you can do to stop him. Nevertheless, he believes that God owes him an explanation. And that if he could meet with God, and that God would explain to him why Job has been singled out, then maybe I'd get some closure. I'd get some rest. If only I got an answer to why I, the innocent Job, is suffering, then I might get some peace. And so he says, chapter 23, oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come to his seat. I would present my case before him and fill my mouth with arguments. I would know the words which he would answer me, and understand what he would say to me. So he'd give me an answer. Would he contend with me in his great power? No. But he would take note of me. There the upright could reason with him. And I would be delivered forever from my judge. That sense, says Job, peace at last. If God would only explain why. Well, perhaps I wouldn't use the word I could move on, says Job, but at least there'd be some sort of closure, some sort of rest, some sort of peace. Do you know that feeling? So what is the answer to Job's why? Now, last week I mentioned we were going to go back to Job's words, but then I realized that actually this will be the last Sunday I should be preaching on Job, God willing, until at least November. So I thought we needed an interim explanation to try and tie a few ends off at this stage of things. So why do the innocent suffer? Why, Lord? Why me? Why does it have to be like this? Well, come with me to the reading which we had, Job chapter 28. Think of Job 28, think of a stage. Job and his three friends have made their exits. And now onto the stage steps the writer. OK, Okay, you may have, as I have on mine, it says Job's discourse on wisdom. Job is not speaking here. That's something the translators have put in. The writer's taken the stage. It's the author's interlude. And he's addressing this question which Job keeps raising. In fact, he's addressing every difficult question we've ever asked. He's answering the why. So 2 points. Point number one, we'll just simply go through the chapter. We call it the exposition. Now, verses 1 to 11. What's it all about? One word. Mining. Surely there is a mine for silver and a place where gold is refined, iron is taken from the earth, and copper is smelted from ore. Man puts an end to darkness and searches every recess for ore in the darkness and the shadow of death. It's beautiful poetry, isn't it? Even in its translation, even in English. But it's saying the length to which man will go to seek out the treasures of the earth. Verse 4, he breaks open a shaft away from people in places forgotten by feet. They hang far away from men. They swing to and fro. It's very evocative, isn't it? If you're walking in Cornwall or North Wales or parts of Yorkshire, walking in sort of long forgotten places, you come across old mine workings where men once sank deep shafts and lowered themselves down into the darkness, swinging to and fro. And far away from the world above, verses 5 to 8, men search for gold, for sapphires. Verse 9, tunneling deep into the very roots of the mountains. Now, mining for treasure, is it easy? No. The rock is hard. The treasure is deep. There's the constant danger of flooding. But whatever the difficulties, ultimately, mining meets with success. Verse 9, he puts his hand, this is the miner, on the flint. He overturns the mountains at the roots. He cuts out channels in the rocks, and his eye sees every precious thing. He dams up the streams from trickling. What is hidden, he brings forth to light. So man's search for the harvest of the deep places, it's ingenious, it's unrelenting, but ultimately it meets with success. If you're determined to find gold and silver and precious stones, if you're determined enough, ultimately you'll find them. Surely there is a mine for silver and a place where gold is refined. But now the writer goes on. He says there's a greater treasure, though, than gold and silver and precious stones. And what is that? Wisdom. Or we can plunder the treasures of the earth if you're prepared to make an effort. Verse 11, if you do that, what is hidden can be brought to light. But, verse 12, where can wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? Where can I get answers to my questions? Why? Why, Lord? Why me? Why does it have to be like this? Why did Nice have to happen? Where can I find answers? Where can I find wisdom? Now, surely that is a treasure worth having. And yet, looking around, you wouldn't think so, verse 13. Man does not know its value. So we have gold rushes, but we don't have a rush for wisdom, do we? Men ransacked the earth for gold, but we don't find them ransacking the earth for wisdom. But where is wisdom to be found? Verse 13, is it found in the land of the living? No. Or is it found in the deep places of the earth? Verse 14, the deep says, it's not in me. Or is it found in the sea? Verse 14, the sea says, it's not with me. Well, can you buy it? Everything has its price. As a little girl, my mother used to lie in bed trying to think of things that Harrods didn't sell. Oh, verse 15. It cannot be purchased for gold, nor can silver be weighed for its price. It cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir. It's in precious onyx or sapphire. Neither gold nor crystal can equal it. nor can it be exchanged for jewelry of fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or quartz, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. The topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. You can't buy wisdom from Harrods, or indeed from anywhere. Wisdom is priceless. Its value exceeds all the treasures of the earth. So if you can't buy it, verse 20, from where then does wisdom come? And where is the place of understanding? Well, the fact is, verse 21, it's hidden from everyone. Even a spy satellite can't discover its whereabouts. It is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the air. So where can you find wisdom? If it's not found in the land of the living, is it found in the world beyond? Verse 22, destruction and death say, we've heard a report about it with our ears. The great gates, as it were, to the world beyond, they say, well, we've heard faint echoes, whispers in the dark. Yes, but I want answers. I need to know, where can I find wisdom? Well, there is one who does understand, who does know where wisdom is to be found. Well, tell me, who is that? Verse 23, God understands its way, and he knows its place. The only one with all the answers is God himself. The only one who understands what he is doing with his world is God himself. The only one who can explain God and his ways is God. Verse 24, for he looks to the ends of the earth and he sees under the whole heavens. There's nothing that he doesn't know. How far can you see? Well, on a clear day, high up, you might see 20 miles. For he looks to the ends of the earth. Maybe you're working on a problem and you're wrestling with it, and suddenly you say, it's a eureka moment, I see! But he always sees. He sees under the whole heavens. He sees all, knows all, rules all, controls all. God really is God. So where is wisdom to be found? God has the answer. God understands its way, and he knows its place. Oh, great, that's it then. God can explain why. God can explain why innocent suffering. Well, this is a writer, slow down. Look at verses 25 and 26. It's talking about a storm. Had a few storms recently, haven't we? You feel the breath of a storm. And then the wind begins to blow. And great dark storm clouds muster. And the heavens bow and the darkness comes. And then you get the first raindrops, don't you? The pitter-patter. But the sound grows louder and louder. And then suddenly such is the violence and the percussion that we all dive for cover. We bow our heads and run. And then that sudden bolt of lightning. And a crash of thunder. It's a storm, and maybe you find storms thrilling, maybe you find them terrifying, but it's awesome, it's exhilarating, isn't it? A storm! Now, can you make sense of the storm? Well, it's ungovernable, isn't it? It's just the storm, it's chaotic, it's immeasurable, it's multidimensional, it's all-conquering, and if it's coming your way, what can you do? And we feel so small, so powerless, and that's just one storm. What does it say here? Verse 24. For he looks to the ends of the earth and sees under the whole heavens to establish a weight for the wind and apportion the waters by measure. When he made a law for the rain and a path for the thunderbolt. Now my translation then he saw wisdom. Well, actually, the word wisdom isn't there. The translators have put it in just to confuse us. Actually, it simply says, then he saw it, Still talking about the storm. Then he saw it and declared it. He prepared it. Indeed, he searched it out. See what it's saying? This storm, a storm let loose. Well, actually, to God, the storm is on a lead. And the storm does exactly what he says. He is in perfect control. This apparent chaos is perfectly ordered and controlled by God. Actually, he designed it. He made it. He sent it. Verse 27, he prepared it. Indeed, he searched it out. Just look at the language. It's like God is like a great engineer. He's taking measurements. Verse 25, the weight of the wind. Have you ever heard such a thing? He makes adjustments. Verse 25, the volume of the rain, or maybe it's the number of the raindrops. Verse 26, the storm is governed by his laws. The storm does exactly what God says. And if lightning strikes twice in the same place, it's because God says so. He made a law for the rain and a path for the thunderbolt. There's nothing random that's going on, even though down here it appears to be random. So do you see the picture? From down here, one storm, and it's uncontrollable. You can't make sense of it. But actually, if you can say it reverently, from up there is under God's perfect supervision. It does exactly what he says. It's under his control. It fulfills his plan. This mighty storm is God's handiwork. It's his design. So what seems down here to be chaos, up there is perfectly controlled. What down here makes no sense, it's just a storm. From up there, it makes perfect sense to the one who designed it, and the one who sent it, and the one who set the boundaries around it, the one who even controls and orders the very number of raindrops that will fall. Now the point is this. If we don't understand one little storm, is it because the storm makes no sense? Well, no. It makes no sense to us, but it's not because the storm makes no sense. God can explain the storm. It's his design. The reason I can't make sense of it is that I'm down here. Is that I'm a man. I'm flesh and blood. I'm made of the dust. The reason I can't make sense of it is that I'm not God. Now, if I had God's mind, then I would understand it. But I haven't got God's mind. I've got a tiny mind. I can't even multitask. Remember once I was doing the washing up, I had my hands in the... And one of the kids started talking to me. I said, I'm sorry, I can't listen at the moment. I'm doing the washing up. That's why we don't understand. Okay, one storm. Well, Job has been hit by this storm, hasn't he? And the storm has laid everything to waste. And it's innocent suffering, and it makes no sense. And Job says, how can this be right? How can this be fair? Why, Lord? Explain yourself. And the point is, God can explain himself. He can explain the storm to Job. He can explain the reason why there's innocent suffering. The trouble is that to understand his explanation, Job, you would need God's mind. But you haven't got God's mind. So that's why you can't understand his explanation. To see how it all fits together, you would need to be God himself. And you're not God. So when we ask the question, why, there is a perfectly good, wise, holy explanation. God's explanation. The problem for us is that you would need the mind of God to understand it. All God's equations balance, but the sheer brilliance of the divine mathematician means that we get lost in the first couple of numbers. Only God can explain God. Verse 24, can you look to the ends of the earth? Can you see under the whole of heaven? know. But God can. So Job, the plan is perfect. But don't expect to understand it, at least not yet. God and his ways are past finding out. His wisdom is unsearchable. God has the answer. God has the answer to your question, Job. He has the answer to every question. He can explain why. He can explain why you're suffering as you are. But you would need his mind to understand the explanation, to see how the equation works, to see why it balances, to see why it's beautiful. Only God understands God. So what's Job to do? Because if he can't get an answer, he can't get any peace, can he? If there's no resolution, if there's no solution, then poor old Job will never get any rest. He'll just be destined to wander this earth until the day he dies, sort of speaking, why? There was the man that God picked on. Job, the wisdom that you seek belongs to God. But that doesn't mean you can't be wise. There's another explanation. Look at verse 28. And a man, he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. We're redefining wisdom. So wisdom is not answers and explanations. Wisdom is not God explaining himself, God answering my question, why? Job, forget about trying to make sense of it all. For you, your wisdom is to fear God. Your understanding of what's going on is to depart from evil. Do you see? Job's in the middle of a storm. His three friends say, we understand. Job says, I don't understand. But I think I ought to be able to understand. If God only explained it, then I would understand. But the writer here says, that sort of wisdom, the wisdom of explanations, is beyond all our reach. That being so, the wise thing to do is to fear God and obey him. Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. You don't know how God governs the universe, but Job, you can govern your life by his word. Job, you can't understand and unravel the mysteries of providence, but you can understand how to please God today. Wisdom is not knowing why. Wisdom is to trust and obey. Well, point number two, much more quickly now. Let's look a bit more closely at this answer. So the answer to the question, why Lord, why me, why this, why suffering, it's not the answer we might expect. The answer to the question is the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil, that's understanding. Now, Christian friend, maybe you're stuck on a big question. And the question just goes round and round and round. You know, it calms down every now and again, but then it comes back again. And the question is, why? 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 Why, Lord? Why, Lord? Why, Lord? And you keep thinking, if only God showed me, if only God gave me an answer, if only God resolved this and solved this for me, if only I could see how the equation works, then I'd be at rest. Maybe your life story until recently has been one of sort of hills and valleys. You know, in your life there have been ups and downs, and there have been hills called difficulty, and that's okay, you expect that. And there have been valleys of humiliation, okay. And then there have been the delectable mountains where you've stood on a mountain, you've seen 20 miles and beyond, you've seen great things
about the Lord. But the path has always been onward. And the path that you're walking has always made sense. And the difficult places haven't been difficult for too long. But now it seems God has taken a great axe. And he's sliced through your life story from top to bottom. Leaving you horrified, uncertain. And as it's sliced through everything, it's left the emotions raw and bleeding. And the path that you're walking on has been cut through. And you can't see where to go next. You think, well, what now? What am I to do? Lord, why has this happened? Why are you doing this to me? And the temptation is to think that if he gave me an answer, if he explained what he was doing, that I'd have some sort of closure, some sort of rest. You feel you ought to be able to know. But, says verse 28, that way of thinking is not true. Peace is not found in answers. That's not the wisdom that you want. Peace is found in fearing the Lord. That's your wisdom in this situation. So if my wisdom is to fear the Lord, what does that mean? What does it mean to fear God? Well, at its simplest, is to be afraid to sin against him, but if I sin, to be unafraid to go to him. But it's more. It's to delight in him. He's not the most important part of my life. He is my life. He fills every horizon. He's my best thought. He's my song, my laughter, my joy, my everything. And I realize that to possess all and not the Lord is to have actually nothing. But to lose all and have the Lord is actually to have everything. And that far from curling in on myself and saying it's not fair, why? I look outside myself, I look to him, he who alone is worthy. Not because of what I can get back from him, but simply because he is inexpressibly glorious. And I realize that without the Lord, all other things are an illusion. They're unreal. And that he is the deepest reality of all. The fear of the Lord. A woman lost her husband in the Vietnam War. When news came, she was at home with her Christian friends. She left the room, went into the bedroom, shut the door. After some time, her friends became concerned. She'd been there a long time. So they quietly listened at the door. All they could hear her saying was, "Father, oh Father, oh Father." That was the answer to her why. The fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. So Christian friend, the answer that you seek, the rest that you crave, is not found in answers. It's found in going to him and telling him all until you have nothing left to tell, until you have prayed yourself empty. He's not about to abandon you. If he lost one sheep, he would lose his good name, wouldn't he? And the good shepherd is not about to do that. He's not about to lose you. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy, goodness and love shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. We're driving through town. There's a lorry reversing. There's a lady about to cross. Do I need to know why the lorry is reversing? Or who that lady is? What I need to do is to react safely and drive safely down the road. That's my wisdom, isn't it? So, Christian friend, why? Why did God make me like this? Why was my childhood hard? Why did I marry them? Why am I single? Why did they have to die? Why have I got cancer? Why am I in pain? Why aren't my children saved? Why does anyone have to go to hell? Why has God sliced through my life? Why innocent suffering? Why? And Job's friends say, we understand. But they don't. And Job says, I don't understand. But if God explained it to me, I would understand. And God says, wisdom is not found in answers. There is a perfectly good explanation, but you need the mind of God to understand it. At best, all we ever do is see through the crack in the door. So your wisdom in this situation is to fear the Lord and to depart from evil. Your wisdom is to drive safely down the road. Your wisdom is to trust and obey.